For some folks out there, there's a fear of being successful. What if we actually make it? What if we actually do the thing? And it's a weird thing to think about. You're like, why would anyone be afraid of success? But what it is at least for me, I'm about to make it. And then whether it just doesn't work out or it quote unquote just didn't work out because I didn't actually do the things that I know I needed to do. And so that's a little bit of me sabotaging it. I'm afraid of making it because if you make it, now there's another expectation and now you got to do more and you've got to perform more and people are looking to you for new things.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Intelligent Conversations podcast. Today I have the honor to learn from Catherine Lewis. Catherine is a UX engineer, podcast host, executive director, and global partnership lead. Catherine has undergone a lot of challenges. She struggled with purpose, worth, perfectionism, and workaholism. She shares in this episode that she went from, instead of looking inward, to looking outward, and how that enhanced her life and improved it in ways that she couldn't comprehend. This episode was fantastic. Catherine had so much knowledge to share. She helped me, and I hope that going through this process helps you, the listener, also kind of think and ponder and kind of identify some of the things that maybe you can do to become a better human being. I don't want to spoil any rest of the show. So without further ado, let's welcome Catherine Lewis to the show.
How'd you even get started with starting the foundation? Because I know you don't just wake up one day and like, you know what I need to do? I need to start a school or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a big idea. And so where does that even come from? And I think most organizations are formed because someone's either really passionate about something or because they're trying to solve pain. And sometimes those go hand in hand, right? You're passionate about finding a solution to your pain and so, yes. Or other people's pain. And so that's really where it came from for me, is having a point of pain and not wanting others to have to experience the same thing alone. And so trying to create a solution and a community around that.
That's what's so cool. And correct me if I'm wrong, you do this with like high school students and like college students as well, try and help them kind of be ahead of the curve, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, that's the demographic that we work with, because it's in that time frame that you're preparing to go off to school or find a life partner, make some of those more bigger decisions in life. And, you know, sometimes at that point, people are also having children. And so wanting people to heal those patterns as much as possible before they're moving into those big milestones in life. So that way we can break the cycle and heal the pattern. And we're not replicating maybe some of the micro traumas that we went through and putting other people through the same.
So when you say patterns, can you kind of describe, like, is this like habit, like bad habits they form, or like, what is it exactly?
Yeah. So it's bad habits, but often the bad habits that we develop are either because those habits have been modeled to us by other people, or other people haven't guided us as young folk to not have those habits, right? And so when we think about our parents or our guardians, those that we're exposed to as we're growing up, if they have things that are unresolved, if they have baggage or false beliefs or patterns that self-sabotage, or another common pattern is reject before you're rejected, just different things like that, then we see that modeled and we'll respond to it in two ways. We'll either say, wow, they're showing me exactly what not to do, and we're going to go to the very opposite side of the spectrum, which isn't always healthy either. So maybe if you have someone who's super aggressive, super assertive, you might become too passive. So there's that option, or we model exactly what they did, right? So if they're an aggressor, we might become an aggressor as well because we were hurt, and so we're hurting others, right? Because we realize, quote unquote, that that's the way that the world works, even though it's not true. It's just what we've been exposed to and conditioned to. So it's looking at and inspiring young people to assess and reflect and look at those patterns that have been passed down to us. What are our parents doing? What are our guardians doing? What are their parents doing, right? Because sometimes this is running through the generations. You'll have a family where you've got four generations of priests, or you've got four generations of gangsters or whatever, right? And so sometimes you'll see these things just perpetuate, and we have to look at and say, is this a healthy thing? Do we want this to continue? If we do, that's fine. If we don't, why is this continuing and how can I stop it?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I just want to add, I think also that everyone's not perfect. So like, regardless, you're going to develop maybe some of these bad patterns or even great patterns as well. I like how you pointed that out too, is that there's also some good things that you can take away, but also bad things. So how do you, I guess, identify maybe, like, what's the process you go through when you try to find maybe some of those bad patterns that you've either developed from, like you said, a parent or guardian or whatever it may be? Like, how do you identify them and then actually do something about it? Because that's something I believe. I believe you have to actually do action if you want to see real change.
Yeah, absolutely. The first step is identifying the patterns. We can't fight the monster that we don't know about. Right. But then you still have to go fight the monster. And so you still, to your point, you still have to do something about it. And there are different ways to identify patterns. One super simple tool is called a genogram. And it's basically where you map out your family tree. So you'll map out your aunts and uncles and your grandparents, great grandparents. And you just kind of denote, what are the health issues that people had? Who got divorced? Who had a life of poverty, who had a life of wealth, all of these different behaviors. And then you can start to see the patterns. Wow, everyone in my family on my mother's side is an alcoholic, or everyone in my family on my father's side got divorced, whatever it may be. And you can start to say, well, why? And how do I heal this? And am I noticing these same things in myself? Do I have the expectation that if I find a partner, that it's inevitable that we'll get divorced because everyone else in my family has too, right? So you have to ask yourself these questions and say, what do I actually think about life? What do I think is the truth? What do I believe? And maybe I say one thing. Everyone likes to have hope. And so maybe I'm being hopeful and saying, no, I'm going to be different. But then I watch my behavior, and every single time I get in a relationship, I'm the first, like, I'm always breaking up with the other person. Right? I'm going to reject before I'm rejected. Whatever it may be, you know, you can transfer this to any kind of addiction, the way that we handle our finances, the way that we manage our friendships. Do we have friendships that are long lasting, or do we assume that, you know, people don't actually like me? They're just trying to take advantage of my social status. And so I'm going to move on to the next cool group, whatever it may be. We have to just raise awareness and ask these questions. And it's really not that much harder. It's not much harder than just asking those questions. And yet if you don't ask the questions, you're going to perpetuate those patterns. And that's what makes life hard, is those patterns.
Exactly. And I want to add something. I think I like how you said questions, because usually it's a series of questions, at least from what I've noticed, that really get you to the root of maybe the problem. Like, it's not, you just ask a question you think you know, and then maybe you go act on it. But then it's like, oh, wait, that didn't turn out how I wanted. So then, but you come in with more insight, and then you ask an even better question the next time, and you start developing better habits, better patterns, and things like that. And I did find it fascinating. So the genome test, could you share a little bit more about that? And like what that is, but also as you're talking, I was a little confused, because is it kind of just family history work? Is that kind of what you were getting at there? Like you go through your tree and all that, like, is that the genome test or is it something more specific?
Yeah. So you can just look this up online, look for the genogram. But basically you're just taking a piece of paper and a pen, and you can write down your name and then draw a line to your mother and your father and then their mother and father. Right. And then there's different signs and symbols and different colors that you'll use to make marks on this tree showing, like, oh, these people got divorced here, or there was a health issue here, or there was alcoholism here, a different addiction here, right? An affair here, whatever it is. So you're just marking this up to give yourself a visual to see patterns. you might notice, oh, it's only this one person that was addicted to alcohol. But you might see, wow, five different relationships ended in divorce. Okay, that seems like a pattern. How did that translate? Did my parents break that pattern? Are they still together, or did they also get divorced? And so you're just creating this visual to start noticing what's common in your family.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. Why you do that? So I guess, I mean, you already kind of explained that people tend to either go one direction or the other. Is there any like study or anything that kind of indicates why we do that? Like why we may follow one path, like, and almost mimic exactly what the parent does, or why we go completely the different direction, almost like opposite of what they're doing? And is it also possible to do this to maybe perhaps good habits or good patterns as well?
Yeah. I guarantee there are plenty of studies out there for folks to go and look at. I won't cite any specifically, but what I will say is things that you can start to notice is commentary that you're hearing. So for example, let's say you take someone who, you know, their father is abusive or they're irresponsible with finances, and the mother comes to them, sees their behavior and says, "You're going to be just like your father." Right. And so you start getting this messaging, and people will hear things like this and they say, well, you know, that's what she says. Like, I love my mom. I believe my mom. It must be true. And regardless of who they actually are, they will start molding and conforming their behavior to be that. And so whether it's conscious or not, they will study, they will monitor their father's behavior in this example, and they will start doing the same thing. So maybe they act a little bit more aggressive, or maybe they're reckless with their finances or whatever it is. And it can go, you know, this doesn't apply to any particular gender. Like, we all have these patterns. Mm-hmm. But you have to listen to the messaging. Or maybe sometimes you're getting messaging of, wow, you are so intelligent. You're going to be amazing. You're a genius. And sometimes people don't identify with that. And they say, there is no way that I can hold up to that expectation. And you'll notice that they start failing all their classes in school. And so even though they are smart, they can come in, they can take that test at the very end, like, they're not going to try in school because it's like, I can't uphold those expectations. Like, I don't want you to think that about me.
Dang. No, I never even thought of that. So thank you. Because you shared the story of that the kid that goes in the classroom and takes the test. I did that quite a bit.
I was noticing, I was like, does this sound familiar?
Yeah, no, you're right on. I did that all through school. It would just be like, I'd show up, take the test, get a decent grade. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you don't care. You don't really, you're like, oh, well, why bother? And then when you actually face something that's actually challenging, you kind of just give up. You're like, yeah. What's the point? But I have to say, and this is something I would say kind of helped me a little bit, was sports for me was a way of working, like, built at least somewhat of a work ethic, because it was always challenging. There was always someone better. But I do want to ask you this, because I think just recently I realized I kind of get into this pattern where like sometimes where I'm work so hard at something, and then, you know, maybe something doesn't go my way, or I don't meet those expectations. And then my instant reaction is like, all right, well, I got to work harder. I got to do more. And it's kind of this never ending cycle. And not to say that working hard is not a bad thing, but you're more willing to put yourself in not necessarily miserable situations, but it can be miserable at times. Does that kind of make sense, what I'm getting at there?
Yeah, what I'm hearing you say is you have a certain goal. You will work really, really hard towards that goal. Maybe you don't meet that goal. And so then you come back and you're kind of hard on yourself. You bring out the whip, and it's like, you need to crack down and you need to go even harder for this next thing. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yes. No, that's exactly it.
Okay. What I would ask is there anything that happens right before you're about to make it, right? You're about to hit that goal. Is there any self-sabotaging behavior?
Occasionally, here and there. I will admit, I do get scared sometimes. It's like, oh, shoot, like I might actually do this. And or nervousness. I'll just get nervous. And kind of, as using sports terms, I'll choke.
Yeah. So here's this may not be it, right? I think there's more details that we might have to go into, but just at first glance, I hear some similarities between you and myself. And so for some folks out there, there's a fear of being successful. What if we actually make it? What if we actually do the thing? And it's a weird thing to think about. You're like, why would anyone be afraid of success? But what it is at least for me, I'm about to make it. And then whether it just doesn't work out or it quote unquote just didn't work out because I didn't actually do the things that I know I needed to do. And so that's a little bit of me sabotaging it. I'm afraid of making it because if you make it, now there's another expectation and now you got to do more and you've got to perform more and people are looking to you for new things, right? And it never stops. That's how we mentally perceive it, is it's never going to stop. And then it's going to be another and another. And you know that already what you're doing is hard. So how on earth are you going to handle the next thing? And so even though we're performers, like we work hard, we can do these things, we like to excel, we're just going to stay back from the edge. Like we're never going to make that jump because we're afraid that if we jump, everyone's going to watch us fall flat on our face and we're not going to be able to fly, even though like we know we have the capacity to. And so we always stay back from that edge because we're actually afraid of making it and then that unknown of what's going to come next. Even when in reality, those expectations are usually ones that we just put on ourselves. There is no ambiguous they who's standing there being like, here's the next set of expectations. Here's the next set of pressure. Like, who cares, right? Why does anyone else's opinion matter? It's usually what we put on ourselves and we're afraid of not making it, so we don't.
I like that. Thank you. No, thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that. So I guess to follow up on that, what's maybe the action, like what is it that you can do to maybe minimize that? Or because again, I do to a degree, I do think it's helpful to, you know, work hard towards something and chase like that, right? That endless chase is can be helpful, that drive. But like, how can you, like, what's the action you can do?
Hopefully this is helpful for some people. What has worked best for me? And let me back up by saying what hasn't worked. When I get into a state of thinking about the future, oh my goodness, if I actually do this, then what about that? And this next thing is coming. And then someone's going to expect, right? You get into that futuristic thinking, and that's where you become overwhelmed and you don't do the thing that you know you need to do. And then you don't make it, right? If I can come back into the present moment and do what is called eating the frog. And it's a funny concept, but no one wants to eat a frog. It's like a slimy, gross thing. And so what that means is come back into today, bring all your energy back to today and just say, okay, what is the one thing, what's that frog that I absolutely need to do that's going to have the most impact, that if I don't do this is going to guarantee, like, I don't make it, is going to guarantee that somebody dies or, you know, some kind of extreme, right? Maybe that's only applicable if you're a doctor or something, but it means that you've got to do this. And it's probably the thing that you absolutely don't want to, and the thing that you're avoiding and finding all of these other like should do instead of need to do in order to fill your time and distract yourself, but still feel productive. So again, you come back into today and you say, what is that one thing that I need to do? And then as uncomfortable as it is, as however much resistance you have to doing it, you do not do anything else until you do that thing, whether it takes you 30 minutes or it takes you all day. And most of the time, we imagine it's going to take a lot longer than we think. It's probably a lot simpler than we have in our mind, but we like to do that to keep ourselves from doing it. We create this huge mental roadblock so that way we can't move forward with it, because we know what moving forward with it would mean. It would mean we have to face this fear. So that would be my suggestion, is to eat the frog.
I like that. No, that's has some humor to it too. So no, thank you. No, that benefits me, and I know a lot of people that are listening probably have similar situations where, and I like that the thought where we just, because I mean that's almost like, I mean this might sound stupid, but it's like the thing that we're making our mind, we put those, it makes sense now, but like we put those mental roadblocks in the way, making it way bigger of a problem than it actually is. And oh, we need to put more time into this than maybe is actually necessary. And so then, I don't know, it almost like tricks your mind that's like, oh, this isn't like worth your time to do right now because it's such a big, big thing. But in reality, it's not.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah.
But I'm curious, how did you get like exposed to kind of this line of thinking, like just these ideas to begin with? Because I mean, for me, this is the first time. And I like to think that we never come across it on our own. Did you have someone that kind of helped you through this as well?
Yeah, it's been a very long journey. So I started this process of coming to this way of thinking when I was a kid. So when I was young, I went through some traumatic experiences. We had some dysfunctional patterns in my family. But I started watching the adults around me and saying, okay, what you're doing doesn't make sense. Like that seems counterproductive. That is hurting me. And if you just did this other thing, like we could easily solve this problem. And yet I'm noticing that you have insecurities and you have false beliefs that are holding you back from making that change. Like what the heck? This is frustrating, right? And so I started to dive deeper into this and reading a lot of books around leadership, a lot of books around emotional intelligence, all the things that I already was gravitating towards and just wanted more information on. And so I was an avid reader as a kid, and then that led me to different leadership experiences. I, you know, as an example, loved reading John C. Maxwell, who's a great prolific leadership author. I would go to therapy for some of the inner healing work. I had mentors, people who were just like, wow, I definitely see potential in this person and want to foster that. And I was very blessed in that way. So it was this culmination of all these different positive inputs that helped me counter like the negative inputs, to hopefully where we could balance things out. And then just years of healing, years of working on this, years of studying it. And the biggest person that I'm still having issues with is myself. And that'll always be the case, right? We always have to come back and watch ourselves. So I can talk about this quite easily. And then even today, there's something that I need to do and I'm not doing it because I'd much rather be talking on a podcast, right?
Yeah.
So I can talk about eating the frog and then I still need to eat the frog. And that's the biggest place where we all are growing, is none of us is perfect. And we just have to keep applying these things that we're learning to ourselves. But we learn best from others who have already walked that path. So again, reading books, finding mentors, going to different leadership retreats for this particular topic, or find a meetup, go to a conference, learn from those who have already stumbled before you.
I like that. Thank you for sharing that. And this is just a question I had coming up. You mentioned like perfect, like that nothing's perfect or no one's perfect. And I guess where's the balance between, you know, kind of, because I mean, ideally, right, in our mind, we want to do something perfect, but then in reality, it usually doesn't turn out that way, which is annoying sometimes. But where's that balance between, like, because I do think, you know, that striving towards perfection can be a good motivator to, like, do, like, excellent work. But at the same time, like, as you kind of mentioned, can actually work against us. So what's kind of, I guess, maybe that line of where it is not so good for you and maybe where it is actually helpful?
Yeah, I think there's inherently something written on all of our souls where we all are seeking the perfect the holy, the sacred, you know, something more beyond ourselves, something excellent, right? And we all are striving towards that. And we'll do that in sports. We'll do that in work. We'll do that in our scholastic pursuits, right? We'll do that in the way that we dress ourselves up, having the perfect hair or the perfect makeup or the perfect chiseled body, whatever it is. We're all seeking perfection in different ways. And the fact that everyone is seeking it tells you that it's universal and it's written on our souls. So I would come back to the idea of what is perfection. Like, perfection demonstrates that you are worthy, that you are valuable, that you are something that is meant to last forever, right? If it's perfect, it can't be tarnished, it can't be damaged, it's not going to decay. We know our bodies are decaying. We know that we're all written to be born to then die. And so there absolutely is no way that we can reach perfection, like here as a broken human being on earth. And so then you have to come back to, okay, well, what can I do within this life? Like, what is actually rational and realistic? And it's not seeking perfection, but it's recognizing that you were created perfectly. And so what that means is I don't need to strive for anything. It's not about me gaining that worth and that value. It's recognizing that I was made worthy and I was made valuable. And so if you have a faith journey, then it's coming that back to that faith and knowing that your creator made you exactly as you need to be. And you don't need to go through your life striving for something, trying to obtain something. And it's that once I make it, then I'll be good enough, right? Once I get there, like, everyone's going to approve of me, because we all know that that's a lie. Like, once you get there, they're going to want more. And that's what we're afraid of, right? And so then now you can go through your life and you can say, okay, I'm not attached to this perfection. I already know within myself that I'm good enough as I am. And you really feel that on a deep level. And for me, that's the only way that I've gotten there is through my own faith journey. Like, it didn't come from any of my accomplishments. And so now I'm free to say, okay, what do I need to do in this life? And usually where that takes you is a place of humility and service. How can I help others? It's no longer about me. This story is not about me. It's about what can I do for other people? And then my focus has totally shifted from me, myself, my perfection. Am I good enough? What am I doing? To, hey, this is what I got. This is how I was made. How can I use this to help you? What do you need? Right? And then you're not even thinking about that perfection. You're just being. And honestly, in that state, you're probably more perfect than you were before.
It's interesting. But almost instead of turning inward, you turn outward. Like, you go out and you try to, as you put it, serve others. And so, I mean, this is the question I kind of have. And that's, let's say you're just starting out. I mean, I'm going to kind of shift here and let's focus on one aspect, like your career. And I mean, when you're first starting out, let's be real, most people don't have that many skills. So you still have to develop those skills over time. So I mean, kind of using that approach, that outward approach of service, how can you go out and serve others if you yourself don't feel like you have anything to offer to begin with?
Yeah, it's true. Most of us start our careers and we don't have a ton of skills, and that's okay, because as you go through your career, you realize that everyone else is trying to figure out theirs as well. So like, by the time that they've moved up to the next position, even your CEO is trying to figure it out. Like, they don't have the skills to be a CEO. They have the potential to gain the skills to be a CEO, and it's only by being a CEO that they now have the skills to be a CEO. So no one's ever moving into a position where they already have the skills they need for that position. They should be moving into a different position, right? If that was the case. And so with that in mind, you have to come from a place of service in terms of, all right, if you're working for yourself, then you've got to ask your customers what their needs are. You know, if you're starting your own business, if you're working for someone else, then you've got to go to your manager and look at the business as a whole and say, what do they need from me? Because I went into my career focused on me. I had heard quite a bit across my life, like, you have so much potential, you have so much to give. And it was like, great, then give me that title and put me in that position. Like, I'm being told I can do all the things. And And then being disappointed when it was like, well, why isn't anyone else recognizing this? And it's not that they weren't. It was that I, again, was focused on myself. How can I get the title that matches how great I am? These kind of self-focused thoughts. And instead, you have to come from a place of humility and say, what does my boss need? What do they need? What do they need from me today? They need for me to respond to this email. They need for me to show up at this meeting. They need me to get this task done. And then it's going to be something else the next day and the next day. And yeah, there is this aspect of it that's very mundane. But that is what's more real in life than this extraordinary stuff that we are told we're supposed to go after. When you go after that, it's like only ever eating sugar. If you only ever ate sugar, you would just be sick. We have to eat our fruits and vegetables and protein and et cetera. And so that's the same thing in work. You have to focus on the ordinary. That's how you get to the extraordinary. It's not by focusing on the extraordinary that you get there. And so just eat the frog. Do the thing that they're asking you to do. And it's day in and day out and day in and day out that you will gain those skills and that you'll be ready for that next thing.
I like that. Thank you for sharing that. I like that approach. It makes sense, to say the least. And even I like the point you made where even the CEO doesn't have the skills to necessarily be the CEO. He's learning as he goes and serving him. And if you're working for someone else, then you are serving them and trying to do the best you can for them. So it's almost taking the approach of service and serving the community and those around you to try and create a better community, a better environment for everyone to thrive in. Mm-hmm. And I think that's cool if everyone kind of took that approach. So dang. No, I appreciate this. This has been great. So if people want to work with you and do all that fun stuff, what's the best way they can do that?
Yeah, so we have a couple opportunities. In terms of the organization, the Leon Foundation of Excellence, they can check out leonfe.org. There we have a free leadership course. It's geared towards high school students, but honestly, anyone who wants to get started in this journey can get started. And there's 30 modules. Again, it's free. It'll walk you through how do I start developing that emotional intelligence, self-awareness, discovering these patterns, etc. And then on the other side, I have a podcast. It's called Opportunity Made, and we talk through barriers that people encounter in life and how they push through those to create new opportunities for themselves. The main message is that anyone anywhere can create any opportunity. It's just how patient and persistent you are willing to be. So hopefully folks can join in on those conversations too. We've got some fun episodes coming out.
No, and I can attest to that. I listened to your latest one and it's really well done, really organized, and has a lot of information that people can benefit from. Well, Catherine, thank you. Thank you for coming on today. I appreciate the knowledge you shared. And I know I definitely benefited from the knowledge you shared, and I know the listeners have as well. So thank you. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you for having me.
All right, everyone, as you can tell, that is Catherine Lewis. She's a very intelligent person, has great things to share. I challenge you guys, if anything spoke to you and you enjoyed this episode, to reach out to her. I'm sure Catherine would be happy to help. And she left some information there if you're interested in taking some of her courses or getting some specialized coaching from her. Stay tuned till next week. We have a great guest lined up for you guys. See you guys next week, and let's get after it. Hey everyone, if you liked this episode and would like to hear more, be sure to hit that subscribe or follow button. We release a new episode every Wednesday for you guys to listen to. Thank you guys so much for the support that you give. We could not have done this without you guys. If you would like to be a potential guest on the show, check out intelligentconvos.com and fill out the form there. Thank you guys again, and let's get after it.